Hören Sie nun wieder Ulrich Nöten mit der Geschichte des Pferderennens von Sankt Petersburg.
Die vom Rennen erschöpften, schweißnassen Pferde wurden von Stallburschen nach Hause geleitet, und für das bevorstehende Rennen trafen nacheinander die neuen ein, frische, größtenteils englische Pferde, in den Kopfkappen und mit ihren aufgebundenen Bäuchen sonderbaren Riesenvögeln gleich. Rechter Hand wurde die bauchenge schöne Frou Frou auf und ab geführt, die ihre elastischen und ziemlich langen Kötengelenke wie auf Sprungfedern aufsetzte. Unweit davon wurde dem breitohrigen Gladiator die Satteldecke abgenommen. Die gewaltigen, hinreißenden, vollkommen harmonischen Formen des Hengstes mit der wundervollen Kruppe und den ungewöhnlich kurzen, unmittelbar über den Hufen sitzenden Kötengelenken zogen unwillkürlich Wronskis Aufmerksamkeit an. Er wollte zu seiner Stute gehen, doch wieder hielt ihn ein Bekannter auf. »Ah, da ist Herr Karenin«, sagte der Bekannte während ihres Gesprächs. »Sucht seine Frau. Sie ist jedoch im mittleren Pavillon. Haben Sie sie gesehen?« »Nein, habe ich nicht«, erwiderte Wronski. Und ohne sich überhaupt zum Pavillon umzusehen, in dem Karenina sitzen sollte, ging er zu seiner Stute. Wronski hatte noch nicht recht den Sattel überprüft, für den er noch etwas anordnen musste. Da wurden die Reiter schon zum Pavillon gerufen, um die Startplätze auszulosen und für den Start registriert zu werden. Mit ernsthaften, strengen, viele mit bleichen Gesichtern versammelten sich die 17 Offiziere am Pavillon und zogen Nummern. Wronski fiel Nummer 7 zu. Schon hieß es: Aufsitzen! Da Wronski fühlte, dass er mit den anderen Reitern das Zentrum war, auf das alle Augen sich richteten, begab er sich in dem angespannten Zustand, der ihn gewöhnlich langsam werden ließ und ruhig in den Bewegungen, zu seiner Stute. Kort hatte zur Feier des Rennens sein Paradegewand angelegt, einen schwarzen, zugeknöpften Rock, ein Stehkrägelchen, das ihm die Wangen stützte, dazu einen runden schwarzen Hut und Kanonenstiefel. Er war wie immer ruhig und gesetzt, und hielt das Pferd, davorstehend, selbst an beiden Zügeln. Fru Fru zitterte weiterhin wie im Fieber. Ihr Auge voll Feuer schielte auf den näher kommenden Wronski. Wronski schob einen Finger unter den Sattelgurt. Die Stute schielte stärker, bleckte die Zähne und legte ein Ohr an. Der Engländer krauste die Lippen. Er wollte damit belächeln, dass seine Sattelung überprüft wurde. »Sitzen Sie auf, dann sind Sie weniger erregt.« Wronski blickte sich ein letztes Mal nach seinen Konkurrenten um. Er wusste, dass er sie beim Reiten nicht mehr sehen würde. Zwei ritten schon zu der Stelle, von wo sie starten mussten. Galzin, einer der gefährlichen Konkurrenten und Wronskis Freund, hatte seine liebe Not mit seinem braunen Hengst, der ihn nicht aufsitzen ließ. Ein kleiner Leibhusar in engen Reithosen galoppierte vorüber wie ein Kater über der Kruppe gebuckelt, da er es den Engländern nachtun wollte. Graf Kusavlev saß bleich auf seiner Vollblutstute aus dem Grabowski-Gestüt. Ein Engländer führte sie am Zaum. Wronski und alle seine Kameraden kannten Kusavlev und wussten insbesondere um seine schwachen Nerven und seinen grauenhaften Ehrgeiz. Sie wussten, dass er vor allem Angst hatte, auch Angst, ein Armeepferd zu reiten. Jetzt aber, eben weil ihm graute, weil die Leute sich das Genick brachen und bei jedem Hindernis ein Arzt stand, eine Lazarettfuhre mit aufgenähtem Kreuz und barmherziger Schwester, hatte er sich zum Reiten entschlossen. Ihre Blicke trafen sich. Und Wronski zwinkerte ihm herzlich und aufmunternd zu. Einen nur sah er nicht, den Hauptkonkurrenten, Machotin auf Gladiator.
»Hasten Sie nicht«, sagte Kortz zu Wronski, »und denken Sie an eins. Sie sollten sie vor den Hindernissen nicht zurückhalten und nicht treiben. Lassen Sie sie machen, wie sie will.«
»Gut, gut«, sagte Wronski und griff nach den Zügeln.
»Wenn möglich, gehen Sie in Führung. Aber lassen Sie bis zum letzten Augenblick den Mut nicht sinken, auch wenn Sie hinten sein sollten.«
Bevor die Stute sich rühren konnte, hatte Wronski mit einer gewandten und starken Bewegung den Fuß in den stählernen, schartigen Steigbügel gesetzt und schwang seinen durchtrainierten Körper leicht und fest in den lederknarzenden Sattel. Er schob den rechten Fuß in den Steigbügel, ordnete mit geübtem Griff zwischen den Fingern die Doppelzügel und Kort ließ los. Als wüsste sie nicht, mit welchem Fuß zuerst auftreten, zog Fru Fru mit ihrem langen Hals die Zügel straff und setzte sich wie auf Sprungfedern in Bewegung, wiegte den Reiter auf ihrem geschmeidigen Rücken. Kort beschleunigte den Schritt, kam hinterher. Die erregte Stute suchte bald von der einen, bald der anderen Seite durch Straffziehen der Zügel den Reiter zu täuschen, und Wronski setzte vergeblich Stimme und Hand ein, um sie zu beruhigen. Auf dem Weg zu der Stelle, von wo sie starten sollten, kamen sie schon am gestauten Fluss vorbei. Viele der Mitreitenden waren vor ihm, viele hinter ihm, als Wronski plötzlich hinter sich ein Pferd durch den Morast galoppieren hörte und ihn überholte Machotin auf seinem weißfußigen, breitohrigen Gladiator. Machotin lächelte, zeigte seine langen Zähne, aber Wronski warf ihm einen bösen Blick zu. Er konnte ihn sowieso nicht leiden, hielt ihn jetzt für seinen gefährlichsten Konkurrenten und ihn verdroß, dass er vorbeigesprengt war und seine Stute in Wallung gebracht hatte. Fru Fru warf das linke Bein zum Galopp vor und machte zwei Sprünge, und verärgert über die angezogenen Zügel fiel sie in stoßenden Trab, der den Reiter hochwarf. Kort blickte ebenfalls unwillig, und fast rannte er im Passgang hinter Wronski her. 25. Insgesamt ritten 17 Offiziere. Das Jagdrennen sollte auf dem großen, 4 Werst langen elliptischen Parcours vor dem Pavillon stattfinden. Auf diesem Parcours waren 9 Hindernisse errichtet. Der Fluss, ein großes, 2 Arschin hohes, festes Gatter unmittelbar vor dem Pavillon, ein trockener Graben, ein Wassergraben, ein Berg, eine irische Bank, eines der schwierigsten Hindernisse, bestehend aus einem mit Reisern besteckten Wall, hinter dem für das Pferd unsichtbar noch ein Graben lag, so dass das Pferd beide Hindernisse zugleich überspringen musste oder sich das Genick brach, dann noch 2 Wassergräben und ein trockener. Und das Rennen endete gegenüber dem Pavillon. Es begann jedoch nicht auf der Ellipse, sondern 100 Saschen seitwärts davon. Und auf diesem Abschnitt lag das erste Hindernis, der 3 Arschin breite, gestaute Fluss, den die Reiter nach Gutdünken überspringen oder durchwaten konnten. Dreimal hatten die Reiter sich schon in einer Linie ausgerichtet, aber jedes Mal drängte sich ein Pferd vor und sie mussten sich erneut aufstellen. Oberst Sestrin, ein versierter Starter, wurde schon ärgerlich, bis er schließlich beim vierten Mal »Ab!« rief und es ging los. Alle Augen, alle Ferngläser waren der bunten Schar der Reiter zugewandt, während sie sich ausrichteten. »Sie starten! Sie reiten!« war nach der erwartungsvollen Stille von allen Seiten zu hören. Menschengruppen wie einzelne Zuschauer rannten nun von Ort zu Ort, um besser zu sehen. Gleich in der ersten Minute zog sich die kompakte Schar der Reiter auseinander. Zu sehen war, wie sie sich zu zweit, zu dritt und einer nach dem anderen dem Fluss näherten. Den Zuschauern kam es vor, als ritten sie alle gemeinsam. Für die Reiter jedoch gab es Sekundenunterschiede, die große Bedeutung für sie hatten. Die erregte und zu nervöse Frou Frou hatte den ersten Moment verpasst. Einige Pferde stürmten vor ihr los. Aber noch bevor sie den Fluss erreichten, hatte Wronski, der mit aller Kraft das sich auf die Zügel legende Pferd zurückhielt, mit Leichtigkeit drei überholt. Und vor ihm war nur noch Machotins Fuchs Gladiator, dessen Gruppe unmittelbar vor Wronski gleichmäßig und leicht den Takt schlug, und vorneweg noch die hinreißende Diana, die den mehr toten als lebendigen Kusavlev trug. Während der ersten Minuten hatte Wronski weder sich noch die Stute im Griff. Bis zum ersten Hindernis, dem Fluss, konnte er die Bewegungen der Stute nicht lenken. Gladiator und Diana kamen gleichzeitig an. Und fast im selben Moment, hopp, hopp, stiegen sie hoch über den Fluss und flogen auf die andere Seite. Unmerklich, wie im Flug, schwang sich hinter ihnen Frou Frou in die Höhe. Aber gerade als Wronski sich in der Luft fühlte, erblickte er fast unter den Beinen seines Pferds Kusavlev, der sich samt Diana auf der anderen Flussseite am Boden wälzte. Kusavlev hatte nach dem Sprung die Zügel gelockert. Das Pferd war mit ihm gestürzt, Hals über Kopf. Diese Einzelheiten erfuhr Wronski erst später. Jetzt sah er nur, dass genau dort, wo Frou Frou die Beine aufsetzen musste, ein Bein oder der Kopf Dianas sein könnte. Aber Frou Frou spannte wie eine fallende Katze im Sprung Beine und Rücken an, und an dem Pferd vorbei jagte sie weiter. »Oh, meine Liebe«, dachte Wronski. Nach dem Fluss hatte Wronski die Stute völlig im Griff und hielt sie nur zurück, da er beabsichtigte, das große Gatter hinter Machotin zu überspringen und erst auf der nächsten hindernislosen Strecke von vielleicht 200 Saschen zu versuchen, ihn zu überholen. Das große Gatter stand unmittelbar vor dem Zarenpavillon. Der Kaiser, der ganze Hof, die Volksmengen, alle schauten auf sie, auf ihn und den eine Pferdelänge vor ihm reitenden Machotin, als sie sich dem Teufel näherten. So wurde das feste Gatter genannt. Wronski spürte diese von allen Seiten auf ihn gerichteten Blicke, aber er sah nichts als die Ohren und den Hals seiner Stute, die ihm entgegenlaufende Erde, die Gruppe und die weißen Füße Gladiators, die vor ihm rasch den Takt schlugen und immer in derselben Entfernung blieben. Gladiator stieg hoch und ohne zu touchieren schwenkte er den kurzen Schweif und verschwand aus Wronskis Blickfeld. »Bravo«, sagte jemandes Stimme. Im gleichen Augenblick tauchten in Wronskis Blickfeld unmittelbar vor ihm die Bretter des Gatters auf. Ohne die geringste Bewegungsänderung schwang sich die Stute unter ihm in die Höhe. Die Bretter verschwanden, nur hinter ihm pochte etwas. Durch den vorweglaufenden Gladiator in Wallung war die Stute vor dem Gatter zu früh abgesprungen und hatte mit dem Hinterhuf touchiert. Aber ihr Lauf änderte sich nicht, und Wronski, der im Gesicht einen Dreckspritzer abbekommen hatte, erkannte, dass er wieder denselben Abstand von Gladiator hatte. Wieder erblickte er vor sich seine Gruppe, den kurzen Schweif, und wieder die sich nicht entfernenden, rasch sich bewegenden weißen Füße. In demselben Augenblick, als Wronski dachte, jetzt müssten sie Machotin überholen, hatte Frou Frou schon verstanden, was er dachte, drückte ohne jeden Ansporn gehörig auf das Tempo und näherte sich Machotin von der günstigsten Seite, der des Seils. Machotin ließ sie nicht durch. Wronski dachte gerade, sie könnten auch innen überholen. Da wechselte Frou Frou den Galopp und begann, eben auf diese Weise zu überholen. Frou Frous vor Schweiß schon dunkler werdende Schulter lag gleich auf mit Gladiators Gruppe. Ein paar Sprünge machten sie nebeneinander. Doch vor dem Hindernis, dem sie sich näherten, setzte Wronski die Zügel ein, um nicht den großen Bogen laufen zu müssen. Und rasch hatte er auf dem Berg Machotin überholt. Er sah sein dreckverspritztes Gesicht vorbeihuschen. Ihm war sogar, als hätte er gelächelt. Wronski hatte Machotin überholt. Doch er spürte ihn gleich hinter sich und hörte unablässig hinter seinem Rücken Gladiators regelmäßigen Hufschlag und die noch vollkommen frischen Atemstöße aus seinen Nüstern. Die nächsten beiden Hindernisse, Graben und Gatter, waren leicht zu überwinden. Doch Wronski hörte Gladiators Schnauben und Springen nun näher. Er trieb die Stute und spürte voll Freude, dass sie leicht den Lauf beschleunigte. Und Gladiators Hufschlag war wieder in der vorigen Entfernung zu hören. Wronski führte das Rennen. Eben das hatte er gewollt und hatte Kort ihm geraten. Und jetzt war er sich des Erfolgs sicher. Seine Erregung, Freude und Zärtlichkeit für Fru Fru wurden immer stärker. Er hätte gerne zurückgeschaut, wagte es aber nicht und suchte sich zu beruhigen und das Pferd nicht zu treiben, um ihm eine Reserve zu lassen, ähnlich der, die, er fühlte es, Gladiator noch hatte. Es blieb noch ein Hindernis, das Schwierigste. Wenn er es vor den anderen überwände, käme er als Erster an. Er sprengte zur irischen Bank. Gemeinsam mit Fru Fru sah er diese Bank schon von Weitem. Und beide gemeinsam, ihn und die Stute, befiel kurz ein Zweifel. Er las den Ohren des Pferdes die Unentschlossenheit ab und hob die Peitsche, spürte aber sofort, dass der Zweifel unbegründet war. Die Stute wusste, was zu tun war. Sie beschleunigte und schwang sich gemessen so exakt, wie es ihm vorschwebte, in die Höhe, und vom Boden abgesprungen überließ sie sich der Schwungkraft, die sie weit über den Graben hinaustrug. Und in demselben Takt, ohne Anstrengung, mit demselben Bein setzte Fru Fru das Rennen fort.
»Bravo, Wronski!«
Aus einer Gruppe hörte er Stimmen. Wie er wusste, Leute aus seinem Regiment und Freunde, die an diesem Hindernis standen. Unverkennbar war Jaschwins Stimme, aber gesehen hatte er ihn nicht. »Oh, meine Wonne«, dachte er über Fru Fru und lauschte, was sich hinter ihm tat. Drüber gesprungen, dachte er, als er hinter sich Gladiators Hufschlag vernahm. Es blieb noch ein letzter Graben, 2 Arschin breit, mit Wasser. Wronski schaute nicht einmal hin. Doch da er mit Vorsprung als Erster einlaufen wollte, begann er kreisförmig mit den Zügeln zu arbeiten, hob und senkte den Kopf des Pferdes im Takt der Sprünge. Er spürte, dass die Stute ihre letzten Reserven einsetzte. Nicht nur Hals und Schultern waren nass, sondern an Rist, Kopf und den spitzen Ohren trat der Schweiß in Tropfen hervor, und sie schnaufte heftig und kurz. Aber er wusste, diese Reserve wäre für die verbleibenden 200 Saschen mehr als genug. Nur weil er sich der Erde näher fühlte und an der besonderen Weichheit der Bewegung erkannte Wronski, wie sehr seine Stute noch an Tempo gewonnen hatte. Den Wassergraben überflog sie, als bemerkte sie ihn nicht. Sie überflog ihn wie ein Vogel. Doch im selben Augenblick spürte Wronski zu seinem Entsetzen, dass er nicht mit der Bewegung des Pferdes gegangen war und, er begriff gar nicht wie, eine falsche, unverzeihliche Bewegung machte und in den Sattel fiel. Plötzlich veränderte sich seine Haltung, und er begriff, dass etwas Entsetzliches geschehen war. Er konnte sich noch nicht klar werden darüber, was geschehen war. Da huschten neben ihm schon die weißen Füße des Fuchshengstes, und Machotin zog in raschem Lauf vorbei. Wronski berührte mit einem Bein den Boden, und die Stute sackte auf dieses Bein. Er konnte gerade noch das Bein frei machen, da fiel sie auf die Seite, schwer röchelnd, und unternahm, um aufzustehen, vergebliche Bemühungen mit ihrem dünnen, schweißnassen Hals. Sie zuckte vor seinen Füßen auf der Erde wie ein angeschossener Vogel. Die ungeschickte Bewegung Wronskis hatte ihr das Rückgrat gebrochen. Doch das begriff er viel später. Jetzt sah er nur, dass Machotin sich rasch entfernte. Er aber stand schwankend, allein, auf der morastigen, unbeweglichen Erde. Und vor ihm, schwer schnaufend, lag Fru Fru. Und den Kopf zu ihm gebogen, schaute sie ihn an mit ihrem hinreißenden Auge. Noch immer nicht begreifend, was geschehen war, zerrte Wronski die Stute am Zügel. Erneut wand sie sich wie ein Fischlein. Die Sattelflügel krachten, sie zog die Vorderbeine an. Doch da ihr die Kraft fehlte, die Hinterhand zu heben, begann gleich wieder das Geflatter. Und sie fiel erneut auf die Seite. Das Gesicht verzerrt vor Leidenschaft, bleich und mit zitterndem Unterkiefer, stieß Wronski ihr den Absatz in den Bauch und zerrte erneut an den Zügeln. Aber sie bewegte sich nicht. Und die Nase gegen die Erde gedrückt, schaute sie nur ihren Herrn an mit ihrem sprechenden Blick.
»Ah!«
brüllte Wronski und griff sich an den Kopf.
»Ah! Was habe ich getan?«
schrie er.
Das Rennen verloren und aus eigener Schuld, schmachvoll, unverzeihlich. Und dieses unglückliche, liebe, zugrunde gerichtete Pferd. Was habe ich getan?
Leute kamen gelaufen, Arzt und Feldscher, Offiziere seines Regiments. Zu seinem Unglück spürte er, dass er heil war und unversehrt. Die Stute hatte sich das Rückgrat gebrochen, und es wurde beschlossen, sie zu erschießen.
First of all, a couple of us say, well, put your fight in your skull. But I don't start to win this game, you must have fight, he's gonna roll. I say that I'm too good to die, go wear my cowboy hat. Say, now, wait a minute, son, now, that's the end of that. But I ain't gonna be you if you wanted me to. And you're gonna be me if I make it to be. You're a big boy now, it's time to set you free in the world. They say go get a steady job and don't go get a steady girl. They say it's not a 9 o'clock, I'm in with you out at five. And if you act very smart, you get a picture when you're 65. But if I ain't gonna be you if you wanted me to.
Please don't mistake me or try to make me the shadow of anybody else. I ain't the him or her you think I am. I'm just trying hard to be myself. Whole society's goal is to be part of the whole. It may sound good to you, not to me. Stand to be understood. I could never give in to or ever live up to being like you think I should. I've got some inner need which I'm trying to heed. I can't take any. Change me or rearrange me to satisfy the selfishness in you. I'm not a piece of clay to mold to your moves each day, and I'm not a pawn to be told how to move. I'm sorry I'm not the fool you thought would play by your rules, but to each his own.
Ladies and gentlemen, technical difficulties beyond our control are delaying our presentation of the Campbell Soup Show, Amos and Andy, scheduled to be heard at this time. As soon as these difficulties have been cleared, we hope to present Amos and Andy. In the meantime, a transcribed organ interlude. Ladies and gentlemen, the difficulties which delayed our presentation of Amos and Andy, sponsored by the makers of Campbell Soups, have now been cleared. Here are the famous pair, Amos and Andy.
Then the next thing, I sort of forgot some of the words to the song I was going to sing.
Yeah.
Couldn't get them in my head.
Yeah.
Then you know that Mrs. Van Poulter and myself ain't speaking to each other, and we were supposed to sing together.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Then a little thing like, this didn't mount to nothing, but I started thinking about getting up in front of all them people and something going wrong.
Oh, now, that's it right there. Now you done beat around the bush. You done finally got in there where the rabbit is. Yeah.
Well, what's that? What?
Yeah, well, that is that thing you're talking about. That is the germ that starts the whole fever, that fear germ.
Oh, I wasn't scared.
You think you was, and you were so nervous that all the nerves in your throat got together and say, let's tighten up on him. That's what your nerves say.
Well, I've been over and talked to my singing teacher.
Hmm.
I told her that I was better now.
Yeah.
Then she told me that she was going to have the recital next week.
Oh, you was over there early this morning. Yeah, you told me that. Yeah.
Oh, I'm in great shape. Oh, ho, ho, ho. Oh, ho, ho, ho.
Yeah.
Come, come, I love you only. Oh, boy, I really wish the thing was tonight.
Yeah, you really wish the thing was over and that you was a big success. That's what you really wish.
No, no. I tell you, I know that I'm going to be a success.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the newspapers is all going to be there to hear me sing.
Well, now listen, and I didn't want to show you this, but here's a little piece that was in the newspaper today.
What's that?
Look here, I'll read it to you. The Bluebird School of Singing, which is managed by Mademoiselle Henrietta DeWitt, announced that the recital scheduled for tonight would be postponed until a later date due to illness of some of the participants.
Yeah, well, that ain't bad.
Now, listen to this. Andrew H. Brown contracted buck fever yesterday as the 0 hour approached. However, it was reported in Harlem that he knocked himself out with his own singing at rehearsals.
That's a fine thing.
Residents of Harlem claim to have never heard Mr. Brown sing. That noise you have been hearing for the past 2 weeks, which resembles a cow, was Mr. Brown rehearsing for his debut. Now, there's something. It is reported that Mrs. Henry Van Porter, one of our better singers in Harlem, flatly refused to have her voice humiliated by singing a duet with Brown.
Better singers.
This, we believe, was the real cause of the postponement. Although this writer called Mr. Brown on the phone yesterday for a statement, but found him unable to talk, much less sing. We are looking forward to the recital next week, when it is hoped that the teacher will be able to drug Mr. Brown sufficiently to get him on stage.
Ivory, let's the whole thing, and I'll sue the newspaper for assault, battery, and slander.
Yeah, well, don't start suing the newspaper now, because they print the news, and this is news.
Yeah, but why has they got to stand up and say all that about me? Some little reporter that ain't got sense enough to come in out the rain and write that stuff. Wait till the newspaper crickets hear me sing.
Yeah, well, that's who wrote this. This fella is the music cricket on the paper. He is the one that's going to report after he hears you sing.
Oh, he is, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I better let bad enough alone.
Yeah, I say you might as well. Don't forget, don't try to fight the newspaper. Remember, the pen is mightiest than the sword.
Yeah, I'd rather get stuck with a pen, though.
Yeah, well, he's sticking you with one now.
Yeah, that's the way with these crickets. They can't do nothing themselves, and they find fault with everything everybody else do.
Well, the man is paid to find out the news about singing, and he got to tell the truth, because the public wants to know the latest news.
My public. How can they be like that? I love them.
Wait a minute. Here comes Henry Van Porter.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to him.
But don't start an argument with him.
Oh, he's on my side. Come in, Henry.
Well, how is you today, Henry?
Well, my charming friends, how is you? Mrs. Van Porter is home, and she's having a nervous breakdown.
Oh, she is, huh? What's the matter with her? Getting old?
Wait a minute, Andy.
I do not like that remark about Mrs. Van Porter.
Well, you don't like her singing neither, do you?
Well, her singing has nothing to do with the remark you made. I'll have you know, Andrew Brown, that she is a member of the younger set.
All right, all right. Well, what's the matter with her?
Yeah, what is the matter, Andrew?
Well, it just seems that this singing that she's doing is getting on her nerves. Last night, she heard the news of the postponement, and it just messed up all of her plans.
Yeah, well, Andy had a bad throat here till they called the thing off.
Yeah, I was sick as two horses there for a while.
Yeah.
Well, confidential and under your hat, Mrs. Van Porter went to a store here in town, and she got a new dress to take home on approval. She was going to take the dress back Saturday morning, and she had a hard time getting the dress out of the store.
Oh, yeah, they won't let my wife take none out unless they put one of them lead sinkers on it. And if you take the lead sinkers off, why, you got to keep the dress.
Well, they had the little lead weights on the dress that Mrs. Van Porter borrowed, but she got some flowers to cover the lead.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they do that.
But now she can't use the dress for the recital, and of course, she blames you for the whole thing, Andy.
Well, you blame me for it, huh?
Yeah, what's that?
Well, first of all, she say that you are teacher's pet.
Well, one thing, I paid that teacher $21. I ought to get a little petting for that. That's more than Mrs. Van Porter done paid. You know that teacher can't live on IOUs.
Well, boys, some things you know goes wrong and you can't do nothing about them.
Well, I will be glad when this singing is over, because it is about to drive me out of my own home.
Well, don't forget we got to practice. People complaining about my singing.
Well, yeah, and there's been some complaints, yeah.
I have heard, come, come, I love you only, till I'm about to jump out of a window.
Well, I don't sing that much. I vocalize.
Hey, ee. I, you, Yeah, well, that is the thing, Andy, that the fellas is talking about in the newspaper, you know.
Mrs. Van Porter says that you will ruin her voice.
Well, how about her ruining my voice? She got me deaf in one ear now, the side she sings on.
Yeah, well, tell me this. When do you think the recital is going to be?
Well, Mrs. Van Porter talked to the teacher a while ago. And the teacher thought that she would tell everybody, but the singers, a little ahead of time and not tell them till a few minutes before the recital happens so that they won't have time to get scared.
Scared? I ain't scared, I'll tell you that. I'll sing in front of anybody. Be very funny if you see me in Carnegie Hall.
I think they got a janitor, Andy.
All right. Be funny now. Be funny. I'll show you. Wait a minute. Come in, son.
Well, hello there. What y'all doing in
here?
Hello,
Amos.
Yeah, well, we're just talking to Andy here, Brother Amos. Andy claims that, after all, the reason his throat closed up on him and all that stuff, that he claims that he didn't have the buck fever, and that wasn't the trouble with his throat.
Yeah, well, don't think that I got the buck fever.
Yeah, well, the reason I come over here, I just talked to your singing teacher just a minute ago. I just left there, and she says that she is going ahead with the recital tonight, and Andy, you has got to sing.
Well, that's news.
Yeah, well, going ahead with it, huh, Amos? What do you think of it, Andy?
Well, I'll do the best I can.
No, that's all right. Take it easy. I was just fooling. Yeah, now there's a fella that's really got a throat, ain't it?
Yeah, them buck fever germs are just laying in your throat there waiting to hear something.
Come on, son, unlax yourself. I was just kidding.
To many, many families, soup means Campbell's tomato soup. So if it's a favorite at your house, too, won't you plan to have it again soon? And may I remind you that many people enjoy Campbell's tomato soup served as a tangy sauce. It's condensed, you know, double strength and double rich in keen tomato flavor, so it's ready to serve. Just heat it as it comes from the can and pour it over meatloaf, croquettes, or leftovers. It gives them a zippy tomato flavor men and youngsters both like. Many women keep extra cans of Campbell's tomato soup on hand to serve as a sauce as well as a soup. Don't you want to put it on your grocery list now? And Andy, in person, will return to you tomorrow at this same hour. This is Bill Hay, speaking for Campbell's Tomato Soup, bidding you all good night.
Tomorrow, meet the day with a sunny glass of tomato juice, but make sure it's Campbell's. Campbell's canning process retains the fresh tomato flavor that never varies can to can. Tomorrow, turn to Campbell's Tomato Juice, a better drink at breakfast. A grand drink anytime.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. Because of the importance of President Roosevelt's address to Congress, the transcription of the talk will be broadcast over WJSV at 10:45 this evening. WJSV, Washington. Woodbury presents The Parker Family, starring Leon Janney.
makers of Woodbury Facial Soap, the beauty soap for a skin you love to touch, again bring you a story in the life of the Parker family entitled The Dangerous Age, with Leon Janney as Richard Parker, nicknamed Richard the Great. Richard himself will begin our story tonight after a brief word from our Woodbury beauty consultant.
About this time of day, does your face look a bit fatigued? Well, it's no wonder that your skin gets a little tired and drab after you've been busy the whole livelong day. If you're going out tonight, take a Woodbury facial cocktail first. Just smooth on a rich lather of Woodbury facial soap. Massage it in gently and then rinse. Doesn't that sound easy? Lovely debutantes give their complexions this beauty cocktail with Woodbury every afternoon before the evening starts. It only takes a moment and almost instantly revives that fresh, glowing look in your complexion. You see, Woodbury facial soap is made of soothing oils that contain a skin-invigorating vitamin. This vitamin definitely helps arouse the tired skin's vitality. Now, I'm sure you've been meaning to try Woodbury for a long time. Then don't put it off. Get Woodbury today and see how quickly your complexion improves under its skin-enlivening care. Woodbury is now only 10 cents wherever fine toilet soap is sold.
And don't miss the special offer to be announced later in the program. And now here's Leon Janney as Richard the Great.
You know, the way things happen to me, I sometimes wish I'd lived a long time ago instead of now. Things were different then. Well, simpler, I guess I mean. And there were a lot of things you didn't have to worry about. Now take divorce, for instance. Something happened one day in my family that just about floored me. And finally, I decided to talk to my sister Nancy about it. I went up to her room that night and I said...
Come in.
I want to talk with you, Nancy.
For goodness sake, Richard, where is the body?
Huh? What body?
You sound as if you had it buried somewhere.
Oh, no, this is serious, Nancy.
Well, sit down. Oh, not on the bed, Richard, please. You must sit all up. Sit over there, why don't you? You won't mind if I finish doing my nails. I've been trying to get at it all day.
Nancy, what do you think of divorce?
Divorce?
Yeah. Well, it isn't funny, either. Well,
I don't know, Richard.
Well, you'll soon have to make up your mind, I'll tell you that.
What are you talking about?
Mom and Dad are going to get a divorce.
Richard, you're crazy.
Oh, no, I'm not. Say, where were you this afternoon?
My mother asked me to go out to Prescott's farm to get the butter and egg.
Well, listen, I came home from school early today, and when I opened the front door, I heard Mom talking to somebody in the living room. I was just going in there when I heard something that just about knocked me over.
You mean Mother was talking to a man?
Sure. And it was somebody she knew before she was married to Dad, because she said something about stuff that happened when they were kids.
Richard, just because some old friend of Mother's drops in to see her...
You wait till you hear the rest of it. The man said, I'll never forget how jealous Walter was. And then Mom kind of laughed.
Was that all?
No, it wasn't. The man said, I never thought I'd come to this, calling on a woman behind her husband's back. Now, do you believe me, Nancy?
Well, I... Oh...
What do you think she said then? She said... You'd better go before Richard comes home from school. I don't want him to know you were here, and he'd be sure to tell Walter.
Richard?
Well, she did. And then he said he'd drop in to see Dad tomorrow and pretend he just got into town.
Right.
How do you like that?
Well, I don't know what to think.
Well, I do. I think Mother's at the dangerous age. You know, like that picture we saw the other night.
Oh.
Well, she's still kind of young, isn't she? And you know yourself, Dad never sends her flowers or anything.
Oh, don't be silly. Dad's crazy about Mother. Now, listen, Richard. If I were you, I wouldn't say a word about this to anybody.
Well, I'm certainly not going to just sit around while the family falls to pieces. I'm going to do something.
What, for instance?
Well, I don't know exactly, but... Oh, gee, Nancy, I thought you'd help me think of something.
We can't say anything unless Mother does, Richard. We're not supposed to know it.
She didn't say anything to you about that guy, did she?
No, she didn't.
There, you see? Well, I'll tell you this much, Nancy. You can sit there and not say anything if you want to. But if I can think of something to do, I'm going to do it.
Well, hello, Richard.
Hiya, Dad. Can I see you for a minute?
Why, yes, yes. Miss Fenton, get the plans of the Austin House and bring them in to me in about 10 minutes, will you? Come in, son. Come in. No football practice this afternoon?
Oh, well, I got through early, you see. Oh. I thought I might kind of wait around and go home with you.
All right. I won't be leaving for an hour or more, though. Is that all you want to see me about?
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought we might stop at the florist on the way home and take Mother some flowers. You might take them, I mean.
What's that?
Yeah.
It's not some kind of an anniversary, is it?
I just thought if you got her a corsage and maybe took her out dancing somewhere tonight, it might kind of, break the monotony.
Say, what's got into you anyway, Richard? What do you think we are, a couple of jitterbugs or whatever you call them?
Oh, of course not. But I'll bet Mother'd get a big kick out of going someplace to dance. Yeah, why don't you ask her to tonight?
Well, did she say anything to you about this nonsense?
Oh, no, Dad, you know how Mother is, but do you realize that you and she are at the dangerous age?
What? What age is that?
Well, the age where if you kind of take each other for granted, well, somebody else might come along or something. Mm-hmm. Yes, I saw a movie just the other
movie.
Night. Where two...
Oh, I see. I thought it was funny you'd stop in just to walk home from the office with me.
Well, you can't blame me for not
and
wanting
you
to see
let
that...
your mother and me worry about that, will you, Richard? I'm pretty busy this afternoon. You'd better go on home,
Well, okay, if you say so, Dad. I only hope you don't wake up someday and find out it's too late.
Oh, Helen.
I'm in the kitchen, Walter.
Come in here, will you?
Just a minute. I'm broiling chops and they have to be washed. What is it, Walter?
Can't Nancy tend to them?
Yeah, why, yes. Nancy, don't let the chops burn, dear. I'll be there in a minute.
All right, Mother.
Helen, do you know what Richard's got in his head now?
Well, I know. He's been up in his room ever since he came home.
He stopped into the office this afternoon, all full of some notion about you and I needing to go to a dance tonight for a change.
What?
What's he driving at?
Well, I haven't the faintest idea.
Since if I didn't start bringing home flowers for you to wear, I'd wake up someday and find out it was too late.
Oh, good heavens.
You aren't sick, are you, Helen? He didn't mean that, did he?
Well, certainly not, Walter.
The way he talked, I was just about ready to believe you had an old beau on the string.
What? But he didn't know it. Oh, dear, that would be funny, wouldn't it?
Hey, what's the matter with you, Helen?
Nothing, Walter, nothing. I've got to get back and see about dinner.
No, wait a minute. Hmm? Nancy knows how to get dinner. You just said that Richard didn't know something. What was it?
Nothing that amounts to anything, Walter. My goodness, the way you're acting, You'd think I'd robbed the bank.
Well, what about the way you're acting? Huh? You're trying to keep something from me, and I want to know what it is.
I'm not going to stand here and be cross-examined like a criminal, Walter Parker.
Why, Helen.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. I didn't mean to lose my temper. It's only that I...
Mother. I guess I might as well give you this letter.
Well, thank you, Richard. Oh.
It was in the mailbox when I came home. I thought at first I wouldn't give it to you, but... Then I realized that wouldn't be right. It's from somebody that's staying at the hotel.
Yes, I see it is, Richard. Well, I can't stand here talking any longer.
Aren't you going to open the letter, Mother?
No, dear, not now. I'll read it later.
Oh, I suppose you already know what's in it, do you?
Why, yes, Walter. But, yes, I do.
So there was something in all that tommy rot Richard was giving me.
Mother, Dad, come on to dinner. Everything's on the table.
There'll be no dinner eaten in this house tonight until I get to the bottom of this.
Oh, Richard, I told you not to say anything.
So you're in it too, Nancy.
Oh, we are not, Dad. Nancy and I don't know a thing about it, except that fella came here yesterday,
Richard,
and I don't think...
You don't know what you're talking about.
Gosh, Mom, you don't realize what it means to have your father and mother get a divorce.
What?
Divorce? Helen, who is this fellow that's been coming around here behind my back?
That's just what he said, Dad.
Who said?
The fellow.
Helen, will you tell me who this man is?
Oh, I might have known I couldn't keep anything from you. Every time I try to plan a surprise, it all...
Oh, Mom, now please don't cry.
Why couldn't you keep still, Richard? Oh. I knew something like this would happen.
Never mind, Nancy. It's all right. I don't know how you found out about Harry, Richard, but...
Harry who?
Harry Minnick.
What?
You know him, Walter.
Harry Minnick hasn't been in this town for 15 years. Have you been writing to him
I'm
all this
time? I'm trying to tell you. You know, he was with that book publishing company for so long.
Yes?
Well, they finally went out of business, and poor Harry was out of a job. So he went to work as a book salesman. He travels around the country and takes orders.
But, Mom, he certainly wasn't talking about books to you yesterday. I heard you tell him he'd better go away before I got home, because I'd tell Dad he was here.
Did you, Helen?
Of course I did.
Well, that's a fine how-do-you-do.
Well, don't you see, Walter? When we had all that trouble about Eleanor Murray's birthday present last Sunday, I decided I'd get your birthday present early this year. So, when Harry called me up, I had him come over, and I ordered that set of technical books you've been talking about for the last year.
What?
Well, that's all there is to it, and you've spoiled my surprise for nothing. And that letter I just got is a copy of the order. He said he'd mail it to me, and he did. It doesn't seem very funny to me.
I'm sorry, Helen. I'm sorry. It's too bad to spoil your surprise.
Well,
but the idea of me letting Richard stir me all up over a man coming to see you, and then it turns out that he's a book agent, and old Harry Minnick at that.
The idea of two people of our age quarreling over another man anyway. It's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard of.
You know, you really had me scared, Helen. You know what I'm going to do tonight after dinner?
There's no telling.
I'm going down and see that picture Richard was talking about.
What?
See, if you're getting to the dangerous age, I want to see what I'm up against.
Well, maybe I'd better go with you. You might be getting to that age yourself, and I'd hate to go through all this again.
Well, jumping cats, so would I.
Huh. How do you like that?
In just a moment, Leon Janney will be back to tell you about next week's story. But first, a word from Woodbury. Girls, which beauty soap would you say is the finest for the skin? Millions of you will reply, Woodbury Facial Soap, and right you are. For generations, the famous name Woodbury has stood for purity and gentle care of the skin. And today, Woodbury Facial Soap has this added benefit, a skin-invigorating vitamin which actually enlivens the skin's vitality. Just as Woodbury was the favorite of society belles in years gone by, it's the beauty cocktail of glamorous debutantes today. Try a Woodbury facial cocktail yourself. Whip up a rich lather, rub it generously over your face and neck, then rinse and see how bright and fresh your skin looks afterwards. Now, we'll send you a guest cake of fragrant Woodbury in a 5-piece weekend beauty kit if you'll write for it today. This attractive kit brings you also Woodbury powder in 8 glamorous shades, Woodbury beauty creams, and a blush rose lipstick. A complete assortment of Woodbury complexion and makeup aids. And it's so easy to get. Just mail 10 cents with your name and address to Woodbury, Box 31, Cincinnati, Ohio. Send for it right away. Now, Richard the Great, what's the name of the story for next week?
Well, it's called Business Today. You know, you're always hearing about how business is going to depend on the coming generation in a few years and all that stuff. Well, I took a little flyer in business myself. Yeah, you'll be as surprised as I was at the way it turned out if you listen in next Thursday night. Good night.
The Parker family has been brought to you by the makers of Woodbury Facial Soap, the beauty soap for a skin you love to touch. Harry Clark speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
PM, BULOVA, Bulova Watch Time. Courtesy of the Bulova Watch Company, 5th Avenue, New York. WJSV, Washington.
The makers of Post Toasties, the wake-up food, present Joe E. Brown.
Joe E. Brown, that's what a fella Joe E. Brown. Post Toasting on the air tonight. And Joe, make you laugh, laugh, laugh.
CBS, another radio shambles with Joey Brown, featuring Gil and Demling with Margaret McRae, Paula Winslow as Jill, yours truly, Don Wilson, Harry Sosnick in his orchestra, and here's the star of our show, Joey Brown.
Hello, folks.
Well, Joe, I understand that you're going to New York at the end of this month for the world premiere of your new picture, $1,000 a Touchdown.
Yes,
right?
And the World Series, Don. Of course, oh, that's your picture, too.
Well, I guess that's right, too, Joe. Are you driving, by the way?
No. I'm taking the train. That car of mine has a shimmy that I can't get rid of. You know how a dog wags its tail every time it sees a bone?
Well, of course, Joe, but what's that got to do with your car?
Well, every time my car sees a gasoline station, it wags its rumble seat. Don, as long as you're going east, too, why don't we travel together?
But, Joe, I'm not going east. Whatever in the world gave you that idea?
Well, it's right here in the newspaper, Don. Come here, look. It says, where? Naval Air Base, Lakehurst, New Jersey. Navy expecting huge blimp from California.
Okay, Joe, okay. I can take it, I guess. Well, anyway, I hope you have a pleasant trip, Joe. And meanwhile, what's on tap for the program tonight?
Well, tonight, we've had Onyx in the play tonight. And that reminds me, by the way, I want to speak to Ray, our sound effects man.
Yes, Joe, I have noticed that he's been sulking a bit lately. What's he so sore about, anyway?
Oh, well, you know how those sound effects men are, Don. Seems some other sound effects man stole his thunder.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, but where is Ray? Have you seen anything of his whereabouts?
Are you looking for my whereabouts, Joe?
Yes, Ray, I am.
Well, they're not here. I sent them to the laundry. I don't get it.
You don't get it?
No, but I'm working on it.
That's just what I wanted to say to you, Ray. You're not working at all.
Well, I've kept my nose to the grindstone all week.
Yeah, well, from the looks of your head, the grindstone slipped and ground a little too high.
What did you say?
You can work on that, too. Now get back to your sound effects. Come on.
I was afraid you'd ask me that. I forgot them. But don't worry, I can do them vocally.
Vocally?
Sure, you tell a story, and I'll do the sound effects with my mouth.
Okay, but it better be good.